I'm Kristen Thompson with Speak, Serve, Grow, and you're listening to Marketing to Crush Your Competitors.
Hey, All-Star team. For those of you who don't know, well, I've been using Periscope for the last 3 weeks and I'm having a blast, really. Periscope is an application from the same creators as Twitter, and it allows you to broadcast a video broadcast live in front of a lot of people. Actually, it could be international, right? So you could share what you're going through, your experience walking in the park, for example, or you could share value with your audience. If you want to share information about your business, you can do so also. If you want to share something very personal, you can do that. And if you want to share just a few words with your listeners, well, it's welcome too. So Periscope is a great platform and I really enjoy it. So if you want to follow me on Periscope, my handle is at Fabienne Raphael. That's at FabienneRaphael. And there, actually, when you listen to other scopes, what's fun about it is that you get to connect with other people also. And I have to say that my connections on Periscope had been growing like for the last couple of days, because I've been listening to a lot of Periscopes too and learning a lot about it and connecting with other people. And I really enjoy that. So you should give it a try too, actually. Get out of your comfort zone, get into the camera of your phone and just do a scope. It's so much fun. So I'm really looking forward to connect with you on Periscope. Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast, episode 159.
This is the place where successful entrepreneurs share their hustle to get where they are today. Discover how not taking no for an answer led them to achieve their goals. Learn about who inspired them and how they use marketing to crush it in their business. Get financial, spiritual, emotional, and physical tips that are working for them right now. This is the Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast. Here's Fabienne Raphael.
Hey, All-Star team. Welcome to another episode of Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast. Today, my guest is Ahava Liebtag. She has more than 15 years of experience in writing, messaging, and marketing. She's a well-recognized content expert and writes thought leadership about content strategy and content marketing. Ahava is the president and owner of Aha Media Group, a content strategy and content marketing consultancy. Plus, she's also the author of the book, The Digital Crown, available on Amazon. Ahava, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to be here.
I'm so glad you're here too. Actually, let me start by asking you, what attracted you in becoming a content expert?
So I sort of fell into content. I started off as a journalism, I was majored in English and communications, and I became a journalist for a short time after college. And then I worked in advertising and corporate communications. And right around that time, so it was 1999, so the world was really starting to change. The internet was picking up. Mm-hmm. And I was working at an executive recruiting firm writing bios, basically. And I noticed that a lot of the people I was writing about had advanced degrees. So I thought that I should go get a master's, and I went to Georgetown. They had a very interesting program in communications and critical theory. And what attracted me to that was that I was always very interested in how the government communicated public policy to citizens. Mm. And so I thought I was going to study that in my master's program, but I ended up studying a couple of different things. I wrote my master's thesis on Dirty Dancing and Save the Last Dance.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, cool. Yeah. And then I worked for the federal government for a while, doing communications for the federal government, writing website content, writing brochures, thinking up campaigns to sort of explain things to people. We worked on a student's corner. And about 7 years into that, or 6 years into that, a friend who had worked with me there, who had moved to a hospital, called me up and said that she needed a freelance writer. And I took on the job. And then from there, I built the business. But in terms of becoming an expert in content, I think that I was very lucky that right around the time that I was starting to sort of write, blog more and get on social media and talk to people about content and content strategy. Content strategy was really starting to become of the mainstream. Christina Halverson had just written her book and published it. And so people were very interested in those topics. And so it just sort of was a, you know, right place, right time sort of thing. And talking to clients and recognizing that there was a need for people to talk about this sub-discipline within user experience design. Mm. And then also that things really had changed, that we used to think about editorial and publishing as a print sort of discipline. And now it had become, you know, multi-channel. And so companies were really struggling with how to manage this and how to wrap their arms around all of this content that they were expected to publish.
So how did the transition actually occurred from you being a communication strategist for the government and then going as a freelancer and starting your own business?
So a friend of mine, you know, called me up, and I remember where I was. I had given birth to my second daughter about 4 months before that. And I was standing in the middle of the parking lot of CVS, and she called me up and she said, you know, I need a freelance writer. I just had a writer walk out on a job and I'm sort of stuck and I need your help. And I said to her, well, how much do you pay? And she said, we pay $75 an hour. I said, I'm there when they need me. I was on maternity leave and I needed to pay for those diapers. So, I went in, and I remember sitting there at that first meeting. I was writing about foundation content, and I just remember thinking, like, this is what I want to do. I want to consult with companies and help them understand what their messaging should be and help them figure out what they're really trying to say and working on their information architectures. And so I did that for a while, and then somebody gave me the name of some people at home, and this is an interesting thing for your podcast because you talk about crushing your competitors. So I called every single name that I had at home, and I called every single one of them once for 3 weeks for 4 months. So one of them heard from me every 3 weeks for 4 months. And finally, one of them picked up the phone and said, okay, we're ready to bring you in. And so that was really it. It was about persistence. It was about being passionate about the subject matter and really being interested, walking into companies and having this curious, you know, attitude about, well, like, why do you do it that way? What makes it work that way? Why is it not working? What are you doing right? What are you not doing right? And just asking those questions and then getting out and blogging about them and talking about the things that people were facing. And I think my English degree really helped me, because as a writer and as somebody who was consistently forced to sort of put things into metaphor, content strategy is one of these types of ideas that's sort of very hard to grasp unless you have these ideas about what it really is in the real world. And that's really why people responded to my blogging and my thought leadership. I sort of tried to, when you talk about a repeatable life cycle in content, I talk about the barista at Starbucks and how that person doesn't think about how to make a decaf skinny vanilla latte. When I talk about trying to get people things at the same time, I talk about the Rockettes and standing in one line and kicking at the same time. And I think that those metaphors really help people sort of grasp, oh.
So I love the fact that you said that, you know, when you were trying to reach those companies, you were very persistent, and every 3 weeks they would hear about you. Because sometimes people get blocked by getting a no or not getting any response or not getting any replies or answers from anybody they try to reach. So you are a true and a great example of persistency whenever you have this idea in mind and you know it's for a great purpose. It's to serve people. So you went all the way and it served you very well.
Yeah, I was recently arguing with my 10-year-old daughter, and I said to her, why can't you just take no for an answer? And she said, Mommy, I'm your
exactly.
The other thing to know about me, so both of my parents were executive salespeople, and they had offices in the basement of our home, and that was where I used to play with my Barbie dolls. So I grew up listening to my parents, you know, make cold calls, make calls to sort of follow up on business. And I don't know if by osmosis, but I was always very fascinated with how they were talking to people and how they were sort of convincing people to buy their products or their services. And I think that I still cold call people and I still sort of try to convince them that, you know, they should work with us. And I really do believe that what you said about believing that you have value is the critical piece, because I always say to potential clients, once you work with us, it's very, very rare that you're going to work with anyone else because we really know how to do this. And there are a lot of customers who come back to us and say, I couldn't do this without you. I wouldn't even know where to start. So we feel really proud of the ability to write content for customers, help them think about their messaging, to sort of write social media content and content marketing for them. So I do think that there's a value in it, but I also think that the persistence comes from understanding that the no just might be no, not right now.
Exactly.
And that's just always the way that I hear a no. I hear a no as, okay, they're not ready for us. And one day something's going to happen where hopefully they are going to be. And then hopefully it will have been a positive experience for them to have spoken to me or one of my salespeople, and they will come back to us. So I always just think it's about timing more than anything else. Mm-hmm.
You said that you saw your parents literally cold call and like potential clients and following up with companies they were dealing with. And you said you still do some cold calling with your business and try to convince people that they need to work with you and they won't need to work with anybody else after they have that experience with you. So my question would be about cold calling, because it's kind of like there's two schools about it. Like some people say, well, cold calling is good because, I mean, it's prospecting and identifying like who's your perfect client, and then you communicate with them and show them that yes, you can bring value to their business. And then there's another school saying, well, people should be attracted to you instead of you chasing people, for example. So what's your take on that?
Well, if I had waited for acted to me, I never would have built a business. So that's, and I think every business has to sort of make that decision for themselves. I'm in a B2B vertical of healthcare. I mean, we do a lot of other industries. We write for a lot of other industries. We try to really help companies that have complex subject matters that want to explain them to their audiences. So I understand that there are people who think you should only go after warm leads. And a lot of the leads that I consider cold, probably others would consider warm, because I get them the lists off of conferences that I've attended with them. So hopefully they've heard me speak, or they knew that I was a speaker, or they come off of a webinar that they heard me on. But there are definitely still times where people will give me the name of somebody and they don't know that I'm calling them, and I'll call them and email them.
Yes.
And I do it for a couple of reasons. The first is, you never know what you're going to find out on a call. You know, they may not say yes to you, but you may find out a really important piece of information that will help you with your own customers or on the next cold call you make or the next warm lead you pursue. Mm-hmm. And then the other reason that I do it is because I think there's a value in educating people about the fact that this resource is available. Not everybody has the need for content writing at that moment. Not everybody knows how to do it for them. And so I don't just think of it as a sales call. I also think of it as an opportunity to exchange information about what's going on in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have that sort of mind shift around it and you frame it as, hey, I'm just having a conversation with somebody who could one day be a customer and who one day may not be a customer, I think you sort of take the pressure off yourself to make the sale.
Yeah, it's a complete different approach that you have. And I'm sure that listening to this, like a lot of our listeners, will actually take, as you say, take some pressure off their shoulders, because some are literally afraid of doing those cold calls.
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of people are terrified of it. I mean, it's one of the hardest things to do. But I think that's why reframing it is very valuable.
Yes.
The other thing is looking at your strategy. So again, like I said, if I didn't cold call, I wouldn't be in business. I know where my best customers come from, and they definitely come from referrals and warm leads. Mm-hmm. And so I still think it's worthwhile to do them. That's why I would urge people, salespeople and people who are setting the strategy for salespeople, to look and see, well, have we ever gotten any business out of doing that? Because if we don't, then there's no point. Yeah. But if we do, even if a 10%, you know, in a couple of $1 million business, can, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I think that that's the thing to sort of think about. And I'm always urging my, you know, my clients and myself as well to always ask, has this ever worked before? Because if it hasn't, then it's not worth doing. But if it has, then it is.
Yes. Okay. One of the most common mistakes that marketers or business owners do is that they don't have a content marketing plan. So would you reveal why it's so important to have one, and when should an entrepreneur start to create it?
That's a really good question. So first of all, what I always say is content is a conversation in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And we live in a networked marketplace. And all brands have to answer the following question in order to have content. They need to answer, who are we talking to? The next question they need to answer is, who are we as a brand? The third need to answer, what are we saying? The fourth question is, how are we saying it? So voice and tone. And then the fifth question is, when and where do we say it? So which channels and when do we publish? Mm-hmm. And so content marketing is, to me, really about providing conversations in the marketplace that are of value to customers and potential customers, so that when they have to make a decision about buying, they'll come to you to see if you're the right choice for them first. It's really about publishing content so that you'll be top of mind and seen as a valuable resource within an industry. Mm-hmm. Now, there are companies that would say, you know, we don't need a content marketing plan because that's not how we get customers. For example, I could funeral home, you know, we're not going to blog about how to have a funeral or who to call to do things, because when somebody dies, people know of a funeral home or they see an ad for one or they call one. It's not the kind of thing that people are sort of top of mind needing to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And then there are a lot of companies who are doing content marketing and they're even doing it well. And I still wonder if it's really effective for them in terms of their sales strategy. So when people say you need to have a content marketing plan, I think what they're really saying is you need to understand your messaging and then you need to understand how you're going to execute on that messaging. Mm-hmm. It may not be through content marketing. That's just one way to get there.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that then content marketing is one way to get there, but like you said also that you could transmit your message through several medias. So what about the difference in your communication? Let's say if you communicate through blog posts and then you communicate through, I don't know, to something else, like through your YouTube channel, like would you always use the same conversational words, or you would actually make some difference depending of the media you use?
So that's a really good question. So I absolutely think that you need to change your messaging based on your channel. And I think that that's hard sometimes for people to get their wrap their heads around, because then that means that you need to have a Facebook strategy and a Twitter strategy, and you need to have website strategy. And I think that that is true. I don't know that you need to have different strategies for each one, but you need to have different execution plans for each one. Mm-hmm. Where you see this really sort of evolving is if you look at the way the big time old school publishing companies are publishing on Twitter, you'll see this. So I once did an analysis of the way the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times write a headline on their actual website and the way that they publicize that headline on Twitter. And you'll see that there's a massive difference. The tone changes, the voice is different. I mean, it's really almost two different brands talking. Mm-hmm. When they're on their website, a lot of that content goes to print. They use a much more newsy fashion tone. It's a little bit old school to see in headlines. But when they publicize it on Twitter, it's a little more, you know, sassy, or they'll, you know, wink, wink at the audience, mm-hmm. because they recognize that the people on Twitter are going to want to click on an article and read it very differently than the people who are browsing on their website looking at headlines. Okay. And so I would say that as well, you just have to be careful and figure out who your audiences really are. For most places, I don't think it really matters that much. That's what I think. Think that you can write a blog post and be smart about your SEO and your headline and use a similar headline. I just think that you have to be really aware of who your people are and who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. From your experience, Ahava, what do you think that people get all wrong with content marketing?
They produce too much that isn't of interest to their audience. Hmm. It's that simple. They don't spend the time to think about what people really need. So somebody just sent me something. They wanted me to edit a new membership brochure for an organization that I belong to. And they literally wanted to put in the kitchen sink. I mean, it was insane the amount of content that they wanted to sort of include in this brochure or this new member packet. And I said to the woman who asked me about it, I said, has anyone talked to the last 10 people who signed up for this organization and asked them what they want in a new membership packet? Like, what are the pieces of information they really want? Do they really want to see a list of these things? Do they really want to know about this, which they could find out on any website anywhere in the world? So that's where I think a lot of companies assume that people want certain types of information and they don't. And I think is even more fascinating is that they don't give them actually the types of information that they really want to know. Mm. And that's where I think people mess up.
Mm. So they should actually survey or ask, actually just ask their people.
Yes. Just, and that's one of the reasons that I believe in the cold calling, and that's just in checking in with them and finding out what they're thinking about and what they're scared of and what they want to know. And a newsletter I've sent out now for the past almost 3 years, and I've come to a place where I realize it's not working the same way it used to. So I've been talking to different people who read it and ask to see, because I'm recognizing from my stats that something isn't going right, mm-hmm. and I need to know how to fix it. But I can't know that until I talk to the people who read it. So it's the same type of thing. If you want to do it right, you have to be willing to take the time and get there. If it's not so important for you, or you're just doing it to do it, then I guess that's not valuable. But I really think if people are going to do content marketing, they really need to understand their audience very, very well.
Yeah, but then if they don't do that research, if they don't ask their people, well, actually the results will not be the same. I mean, you had the honesty to realize that, yes, your newsletters, they weren't read as much. So you wanted to know why, and you wanted to do some tweaks about it in order to, you know, put your stats back up. So it's exactly the same thing. If some entrepreneur realizes that something's wrong or they don't have the same statistics, well, it's either they do something about it or it still like goes down and down. And then, I mean, results won't be there anymore.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
So one of the last questions I want to ask you is I have like several subscriptions to a lot of different marketers, and sometimes it happens that I receive in my inbox an email that leads me to a blog post that was written, let's say, like 3-4 years ago. So what's your take on that? Can we reuse like old blog posts, or we should always try to reuse like the content but bring it in another angle? So when you get on, let's say when a subscriber clicks on that link, well, it doesn't put you back in 2012, for example.
That's a really good question. So what I'm understanding from you is that you want to republish a blog post that you wrote in 2012, and you want to actually republish it, or you want to back out?
No, the thing is, it happened to me that, let's say I read an email today and the link is from a blog post that was written in 2012. So my question is, like, is that marketer doing a great job, or that marketer could have just retook that same content but bring it in another angle and bring it like more 2015, for example, and then link it to my email so I would read something that was recent instead of reading something that was written 3 years ago?
Right. That's a good question. So I think that there's two things going on there. The first may be that when that blog post was written in 2012, it was written to be evergreen, meaning that it would always last. It would always be valuable to people. And so they're just bringing it up again because something about it is time for whatever is going on in the marketplace right now. Mm-hmm. The second thing could be that the person is lazy. The third thing could be that if you've written something in 2012, even if you wrote it to be evergreen, it might be worthwhile to go back and look at it and see if you can add something to make it more recent. Mm-hmm. The problem might be is that you're worried about republishing things because Google might see that as duplicate content. But there's a lot of ways around that, I think. And I think updating a blog and republishing it is probably not really going to hurt your SEO if you change it enough that you've really made it clear that there's new elements in it. Mm-hmm. Anything, maybe just writing a short paragraph about the what's changed and then linking to the old blog would probably suffice.
That's a good one too. Yeah.
I think if you perceive it as being lazy, that's the main issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yes. So right then and there, you have a problem with perception that a brand doesn't want to get into.
Yeah, exactly.
No brand wants people to say, wow, are they lazy?
Of course not. So now I'm curious to know what's your definition, your personal definition of the word success?
That's a good, wow. Feeling comfortable being who you are. I don't necessarily tie my success to my business success. This is something I've been working on for the past year. It's very easy, particularly when you have a type A personality like mine and you're always driven to do new things. It's very easy to sort of use numbers and use concrete ideas. If I publish that book, if that book sells a certain amount of copies, if I get this number of speaking engagements. But what I've come to learn as I'm sort of leaving my 30s and entering my 40s is that this is really being who you are and doing what you want to do at the moment you want to do it. And maybe that's a definition of freedom, but for me, the two are sort of intertwined with each other. And I think the other thing to remember about success is that it's different for different things. You know, was I a successful mother today? Was I a successful wife today? Was I a successful citizen of the world today? Mm-hmm. Those are all very different definitions. So I think just sort of, you know, you is really what we're getting towards. It's just being who you are and embracing what that really means.
Yeah, that's a great message to have. So
Thank you. If
people want to connect with you and know more about you, I'm sure they do. Where should they go?
So the best place to go is ahamediagroup.com. So ahamediagroup.com. Hava, A-H-A-V-A, and then Leap Tag, L-E-I-B-T-A-G. And I'm the only Ahava Leap Tag that I know of. So it should be pretty easy to find me.
Good. Ahava, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was very, very interesting and inspiring, but also great, full of content. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so glad, Fabian. Thank you for having me.
If you want to continue the conversation, well, I invite you to join our Facebook group called Serious Entrepreneurs Only. That's facebook.com/groups/Serious Entrepreneurs Only. I don't know about you, but this interview with Ahava was full of great content and it was full of actionable tips too. So why don't you go grab the phone and do a cold call right now and face your fears and see what happens? Or why don't you implement one of the strategies that she gave concerning the content? Well, I would be glad to hear about how you experienced all of that. So looking forward to connect with you on Serious Entrepreneurs Only. That's our Facebook group. So I hope you enjoy your week, and I'll talk to you soon next week. Take care, okay?